What do we want to talk about, Jim? What are we excited about?
I've been excited about space for a while.
Okay.
I'm excited about all of the new content we're doing that we've announced and some that we haven't.
How much? So you are less comfortable talking about upcoming content than I am. Probably for the better.
I don't know why, because The Wire is an example of a failed discussion.
Fuck you very much. But I'm going to let you. I'm going to let you be.
No, you want me to talk about it?
Yeah, I'm going to let you take the lead because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. It's the last thing I want to do.
All right. Well, I want to talk about some of the new stuff that we're currently thinking about doing and or doing. I'm not going to talk about dates. I have no idea when this stuff is coming.
Okay.
So don't get too excited. It's probably a ways off. But one of the things, you know, we've been interested in space for a long time.
I had a fever pitch with The Martian.
Yep.
I was disappointed. Yep.
The Martian kind of turned a corner for me.
I wanted to get the Blu-ray. I usually buy 2 or 3 Blu-rays a year, and it's always for the special features. I was really looking forward to owning The Martian on Blu-ray because it's still the best image you can get. Mm-hmm. But there are a few making, like your standard making ofs. There's no like
some
featurettes. How hard can it be to get a commentary track with some JPL engineers?
Right?
How hard can it be to get the guy who wrote the fucking book to just walk us through?
He's done 1,000 interviews. Get him on the track.
Get him and Ridley Scott to sit down and commentary. Talk about the and then I hear that there's going to be a director's cut edition, and I'm like, oh, so it's this. So I got a bare bones thing, shit it out to me, and then I got to wait a year for the extra special.
That's how they get you. They want you to buy it twice.
Well, fuck you.
They want you to buy it 3 times. They want you to buy it on iTunes. Or Amazon streaming, then they want you to buy the DVD/Blu-ray, and then they want you to buy the extended cut.
The special
with
edition.
All the real stuff you'll want. And 20 years from now, they want you to buy the retrospective with, I don't know, everybody involved in Mars One missions.
I feel like I learned my lesson with like the Matrix and the Lord of the Rings stuff. That's just wait. Just wait.
Yeah. Yeah, wait for the Ultimate Edition and you'll get it.
Yep, and there might be an Ultimate Edition 10 years later, but you know, whatever. I was pissed. I was disappointed, but that has nothing to do with what you wanted to talk about.
That sucks. I mean, it kind of does. Like I started getting really interested. Like I hadn't read a book in a damn long time until I read The Martian, went and saw the movie first, but then I was like, man, this is so good. I need to read the book. So I did. And that kind of got me into, I don't know, reading again. I read a few books after that. I've been listening to some Audible stuff. But it got me interested in space is the other thing it did again, you know, with renewed vigor. Cause I heard Andy Weir, you know, kind of wrote this thing, given all his knowledge about orbital mechanics and like incorporated a lot of science in this. I'm like, I would like to learn some of that stuff. And it just happened to coincide with, this game Kerbal Space Program that's out right now, which is, I would say orbital mechanics light. But it's pretty involved.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to like do all the calculations and shit yourself.
Sure.
But at the same time, you kind of need to know the concepts involved in space travel and launching a rocket off the pad and going to the moon and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it teaches you like the broad strokes of it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the only place I'm going to fit in.
Sure.
To it. So we played a bunch of this stuff and we kind of recorded some of it. We recorded all of it that we played. Actually, I played a little bit of career mode myself. But we're going to try and do a series at some point where we set a goal at the beginning of a season and we say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to, I don't know, try to fly a rocket into the sun or something. And we build the rocket ship and we iterate on it until we can accomplish that goal. And whether that takes, you know, an episode or 2 or 20, that's what we're going to do. And we're just going to release those as a season.
I hear hitting the sun is actually a very difficult thing to do.
Really?
Because,
I mean, getting close enough to actually hit the sun.
But here's the thing. Think about how much orbital velocity you have to shed. It's very easy to get in any kind of orbit around the sun.
Sure.
But if you just aim a rocket at the sun, it's going to slingshot Star Trek 4 style into a highly elliptical orbit. You just have to spend an enormous amount of rocket fuel thrusting against the orbit of the Earth to fall into the sun.
The thing is, I feel like you strap enough fuel
you're
gonna get it
again, but how much fuel and how much can you boost the orbit? And how much you got left. Yeah, I mean, it was tricky.
I mean, we're essentially going to be space cowboys, right?
Yeah.
We're not going to have the precision that actual astronauts have, knowing like, oh, I got to come in at a 60-degree angle in the atmosphere to shed the most heat.
I will say that from what I'm playing so far, it's incredible that you can like rendezvous with Pluto or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's less incredible than the scientists, because I was like, think about it. It's like hitting a match head from 100 million kilometers with a needle that you throw.
Right.
And I'm like, it's not really. Like, it's like if you did that, only the needle had a rocket guidance system and it was sending telemetry back at all times.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like the windows that you have to do these things. I mean, there are some windows like... the grand tour of the solar system that the Voyager 2 took, or maybe it's Voyager 1, I can't remember, where it was a artfully arranged gravitational assist slingshot from planet to planet to planet to get all the way, you know, to visit Jupiter and Saturn and Neptune and all that with very little fuel.
Mm-hmm.
That's something. And that's a window that closes. Like once the planets are out of alignment, you've got, you know, hundreds of years before they're in alignment again.
Yeah.
But hitting those actual windows to get the slingshots and stuff are actually, the windows are pretty wide. They're not like seconds or hours. They're days and weeks.
Yeah, that's a surprising thing. And you can course
correct at any time as long as you have fuel.
Like I watch Apollo 13, right? Yeah. There's this super tense moment where one of the astronauts is taking manual control of the thing. And I'm like, how can you hit a 1 degree window in the atmosphere with manual human control? And it turns out it's like a 15 to 20 degree
degree of the Earth, because the Earth is so fucking big, is actually for human scales pretty enormous.
Yeah, you can miss by a good long shot and still hit your goal.
Yeah.
That's the thing that surprised me most, I guess.
Yeah.
Is like how pilotable, like human pilotable these things are.
Right.
And the tolerance is there.
Right.
So like,
when they say we have 1 degree window that we have to hit, that sounds impressive. If someone says we have to hit something approximately the size of the state of Ohio.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds doable. Uh-huh. You can do that with visual, you know, instrumentation and
I used to count down with
a stopwatch.
I used to bullseye womp rats back home in my T-16.
Sure. Beggar's Canyon, I believe.
Yeah. They're not much bigger than that. So that was one of the takeaways. The other takeaways are just how fucking hard it is to navigate when you're going straight up against gravity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the construction challenges are real.
Yeah, they are.
Because you're always fighting thrust and weight, because, you know, you add more. Oh, well, add more fuel because I need a longer burn. Well, now you've doubled your weight.
Yeah.
And, you know, the efficiencies of getting through the atmosphere are such that you've got to, there's like different. That's why rockets have stages.
Yeah.
What you need to get out of the atmosphere is completely different than what you need to get to orbit. And
we're having some fun with that. We're space cowboying it. We're not taking it all too seriously, but at the same time, trying to learn a thing or two.
Lots of explosions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the idea.
All right, what else?
We came up with a new idea for a piece of content called Quit Your Pitching.
Okay.
You want to tell people what that's all about?
Not really. Okay, I guess, yeah. We've recorded enough of them that I think I know what the format is. So Jim and I go to...
The format's subject to change at all times, but just like what our idea currently...
Okay, the idea is that we are going to go to, there's many of them, half a dozen or so, random television name generators on the internet. Mm-hmm. So you hit a button and it generates a random name for a television show. We look at that and then we pitch what that show would be like if we were going to pitch it to someone in Hollywood, and who is going to star in it and what's the premise. And
just kind of off the top of our heads.
Some of them are funny. Some of them are poignant. It's a 20-minute club bald move exclusive thing that we're just going to release on our idea is to have several of them in the hopper so that we can keep a regular release scheduled independent of what the content is. And also something when we have downtime, we can stockpile a whole bunch of them. So if they're popular, that we can keep them coming. What else?
And they're not like any set specific length, like 20 minutes is,
that's
kind of what we record. And then we're going to edit it down to the good ones and
whatever
it ends up being. That's what it is. It doesn't really matter.
Sure. So we're shooting for something around 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah. And a few good pitches.
Yeah.
In each episode.
Yeah. It's a snack. It's an hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah. What else do we have? Anything? I mean, we're, like along with the Kerbal stuff, we're planning on doing some more video game stuff, but you kind of already know what that is. We've done Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, Telltale stuff, and we did the first episode of Life is Strange. We're going to continue to do that.
Life is Strange, yeah.
I've heard that it gets a hell of a lot more serious and a lot more somber.
Which, that's always fun when we've been approaching it a certain way, and then bam, oh, wow.
Yeah, and we have to be the bad guy through
some
really horrible shit.
Sure, or have a level of ironic detachment. Didn't I talk about that on Cocktails with Jim and Aaron, that about ironically playing that dragon cancer? You can't do that.
Yeah, so we're planning on doing more of that stuff because, you know, we both are big gamers. We like that stuff, and it's fairly quick content to produce because it's kind of one-to-one. You don't have to do a lot of research or anything like that.
Yep. That's the holy grail of content. If you can record at the same time that you're doing something with zero prep, and essentially the final product is what you get when you hit the stop record button.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any better than that from a content producer's angle.
And it's also one of the things that, you know, has been, I guess, more popular with people. Like they really like when we do these things. So we're going to continue to do them.
Out of all of our, like, everything's massively less popular than our podcast stuff, but of all the video oriented things we do, it seems like the video game is consistently, even amongst, if we just restricted the club members, it's still the most popular thing.
Yeah. Surprisingly more popular than like lunch and all that stuff.
So. And I get it that, well, I don't know about lunch, because lunch, if you combine the audiences, that seems to be the lunches and the cocktails seem to be, or on the rocks rather.
Yeah. I'm just comparing video to video.
Let's see. The other thing, I guess, what was I going to say? We had one other thing that we're doing. Shit. We just sent a newsletter out with all of our stuff that we got coming up. Damn it. What was I going to say? We had something other. I don't think
we have
it was
other stuff.
I thought stuff we
announced or no.
No. God damn it. What was it? Shit. I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on this. Oh, well. That's what happens when you start day drinking at noon. What else do we want to talk about?
Let's go to questions.
Oh, we were kind of excited about. There's a couple things I can just talk about personally. I finished my network aired community stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Finished the season 5. I hear there's a 6th season of like 12 to 13 episodes on Yahoo. That I'm going to check out, but I think Community is one of the greatest comedies I've ever seen, and it's completely unlike anything else I've ever seen.
Okay.
I just appreciate, you know, there was this really awesome episode in season 5 where Abed, the very eccentric Indian / Pakistani guy,
he's got some social issues.
He does. He's on he's on some several spectrums. He takes a class. So in one of the early seasons, like season 2, he takes a class called Who is Really the Boss, which is an analysis of the classic TV series, and had Stephen Tobolowsky. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Tobolowsky. Yeah.
He was a professor teaching. He said it was an unsolvable question. Like, who was the boss, Angela or I think it was Danny on the series Who's the Boss? And Abed actually mathematically proved that it was, in fact, Angela, and it made the professor quit teaching. It was such like he'd wasted his life and all that. Well, this season, someone was teaching Nicolas Cage. Is he good or is he bad? And he said this was also an unsolvable question. And Abed comes in a room and, you know, he's got this reputation of being a teacher killer. And the professor's like, no, I'm quite confident in my research on the matter. And Abed spends like, you know, the 30 minutes going through, and you can hear they don't I don't think they had license to do anything. I think these are all recreations. But like, if you've seen the 5-minute YouTube video of Nick Cage losing his shit. It's all those performances. You can see Abed is watching a television show, and when he goes to give his final thesis, his brain snaps, and the teacher warned him about doing this. Like, if you delve too deeply into the Cage well, madness ensues.
Yeah.
His brain snaps like 30 seconds into the presentation, and he just starts doing this spot on Nicolas Cage losing his shit impersonation. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Nice.
And they do stuff like, I've been talking about how distracting it is to see Joe Hale get bigger and bigger. Like, he goes from, you know, male model ripped to like fucking borderline Sylvester Stallone and Rambo ripped. And in one of the last episodes, he shoved like this crazy homeless man attacks him, and he shoves him down with like way more force than like is socially acceptable. And everybody's like, "My God, Jeff, what's wrong with you?" And he's like, "I'm sorry, I'm losing track of how big I'm becoming." It's like they just do a lot of this fourth wall shattering stuff.
Huh.
Okay. Then, like, I feel like the last season, Dan Harmon didn't even give a fuck. He brought on the kid who plays Dungeons and Dragons on his podcast, Spencer Crittenden.
Yeah.
Not to play D&D. The episode after that, they play D&D, but he's playing some 1993 VCR board game called Pile of Bullets. Hmm. And guess who is the host of the game, the actual narrative part?
Christopher Walken.
Vince Gilligan.
What?
Plays this old prospector slash sheriff on the grainy ass bad tracking VHS copy, and he's saying,
"Oh, we need to get this game and play it."
It's made for the show.
Oh, sorry, I didn't explain that. Fake. I thought it was real. Okay,
no, I'm just. Vince Gilligan did an extensive cameo on this show, just I guess because he liked it. And just,
all right,
I mean, I've never seen a show where every fucking episode is essentially a stunt episode.
Yeah.
This is the episode they take over and play paintball. This is the episode where they pretend the school's floor is lava.
Yeah, that was the most notable thing about Community to me.
Yeah.
Was kind of all the pop culture type references they integrated in inventive ways.
And they go all out with it. Like, it changes. There was a whole where Joel had some kind of psychotic break, and he envisions himself as a G.I. Joe character, and the entire episode is an animated in the 80s style G.I. Joe, except for like he opens up when he kills Destro.
Okay.
And is brought up on like war crime. Well, you know, the.
No.
Okay. So do you know this about G.I. Joe, the TV show? No one died on
Cobra.
It.
Oh, okay.
Like billions of shots are fired, airplanes explode, you always see a guy bail out, a tank will explode, but you always see the ground crew bail out right before it does. He ends up just straight up murdering Destro. Okay. And he's brought up for like war crimes trial because like people just can't believe in like what the ripple, like now Cobra shows the Cobra organization where Cobra's given a eulogy and it's really shitty. He's like, "What do you want? I've never given one of these before." And it's like their insurance rates have shot up the roof because no one's ever died or gotten sick. And now there's a death. So it's hilarious. Wow.
It's good.
It's so good stuff. So I finally finished. I guess I got 13 more episodes of Yahoo, which I hear is a lot like the Arrested Development, where it's like, I guess people are glad that there's more, but it doesn't attain the heights that it did in its glory years. So
sure, I did watch Arrested Development, the Netflix thing.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't because I heard like you said that and Cecily said that, and I was just like, I guess I didn't have that burning need to see it. I also didn't like
watching.
I also, this is semi-controversial opinion incoming. I didn't think Arrested Development was as funny as people said it was.
I feel like it's one of those shows that rewards being a super fan and really digging into it.
Probably.
And that's the thing that people appreciate most. Not that it's the funniest thing you've ever seen, but the intricate ways which it weaves a story and kind of ties things back on itself.
It's funny and kind of the up your own ass kind of funny.
Yeah.
But so is Community, and I love that. And so I don't know why I never really connected with that. But
yeah, I guess Always Sunny is kind of like that in some ways. It's not as intricately plotted, though.
Do you have opinions on the new series season of Always Sunny? I haven't seen any of it yet. I see the first two episodes this week, and I'm like last year, I thought they were by and large fire.
Yeah.
This year, I have barely cracked a smile.
All right. We've got, what, 8 more episodes?
And then, you know, like I said, last year, I watched all 9-10 seasons in its entirety. So maybe I just, I'm overexposed.
Could be. Last year, they started out with a real cracker.
Yeah.
They started out with the Wade Boggs episode.
I can't think of a single bad episode they had last year. I thought they were all above average to just hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they go to the well, because like the first episode is the gang plays that.
Oh, Chardy, that board game.
Yeah.
Chardy Mick.
Who are we missing out? Charlie Mack. Dindy or something, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact name, but it's all
whatever. It's a stupid board game.
That was one of my least favorite episodes.
And they brought it back.
Yeah.
And no, it didn't have enough. It just doesn't have enough legs, man.
Yeah.
So I guess we should go to listener feedback now.
Sure.
Okay, Wes Stevens, I can talk about this. I almost did. How are you doing, Pocket Mortys? Progress, favorite Mortys, etc. I'm doing pretty good. I think I've defeated three. I'm trying to take it easy. Like, this is my bedtime game. I sit down and I play for 15, 20 minutes before I go to bed. And I've got about, I've beat, you saw me, because I also like to Chromecast this on my big, I'm playing this phone game
on your TV.
On my 50-inch plasma. I've beat about four council members, so I think I'm a third of the way done. And my favorite Morty right now is an ancient Morty that I bred to, I think, elderly Mortys to make a geriatric Morty. I found like a level 16 geriatric Morty in a field. I bred them together and I've got essentially the corpse keeper Morty, but he hits like a fucking train. The other thing I've been doing is I take my default Morty, the one that comes with Rick, and I've been just pumping him full of level up and attack. So, like, I can usually one-shot a Morty that's one or two levels below me with my basic attack. And I've been, like, farming materials and stuff by just going to a random plane of existence where Rick's at, and I just plow through all of the challenges and the wild Mortys and stuff. The thing I'm having trouble with now is that it's getting harder to capture Mortys because my Mortys are so powerful that I'm accidentally disabling them before I can capture them.
Are you crossing the streams?
No.
Is that your problem? No.
Even like I was really frustrated because I had a, I found, so I guess you can breed a Cronenberg Morty or no. There's, so you get the, you, there's a double Morty that has two heads.
How would you know where to put it? To breed with a
sure
Cronenberg.
We don't breed them, you can buy, it's combined. So it's in okay. Pokemon, it's breeding and evolution. This is combinations. So I took the two-headed Mortys, bred them together to a three-headed Morty, and I guess you can breed those together to get a Cronenberg type monster Morty.
Good.
But and I actually switched to a paper Morty, which is super weak against the three-headed Mortys because the three-headed Mortys are scissors. And even then, his basic attack was too powerful to capture the Morty, and I knocked him unconscious. Yeah. And the other thing is, they say you can capture Morty when he's at yellow health. I have probably spent three or four Marty manipulators that just fizzle because, like, unless they're, as far as my personal experience, I'm 0 for 4 capturing a Morty who's just dazed. He's got to be, like, in the red on health before I can capture him. But, yeah. I've also found out a whole bunch of recipes. Like, I made the sex doll. I don't know what to do with it yet, but it's in my inventory. I got one of Morty's sex dolls built. That's pretty funny.
All right. Well, if you breed with that, you get
Gazorpazorp, I think. A male.
Is that what they called it? Yeah.
No, the Gazorpazorp's something different. I forget. Or maybe it was Gazorpazorps.
You get something that's gonna potentially destroy all of humanity.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm having it is. Hasn't got old. I can see where, like, essentially this is the bare bones of Pokemon, and yeah. I think the only reason I'm staying with it because I didn't ever play Pokemon, so but it's for a free game, it's pretty strong, and cool. I never was tempted to spend a single dollar on it, so
yeah, I never spend money on those games.
I know people do because you get free Mortys for pretty much every dollar you spend, you get free Mortys and a bunch of shit and this and that, but I've been able to craft, I mean, the early game economy is kind of busted because it's so expensive to buy serums and shit, but there's no penalty for dying. So for a long time, I was just like, okay, well, if you beat my Mortys, fine, I'll take all the shit that I got and go back and heal and for free, don't lose anything. But also,
that sort of thing.
With crafting, I was able to craft enough serums to play without actually spending money on them. And now it seems like the currency is, like, I'm getting like roughly a serum's worth of money every time I beat one of the mini Morty battler guys. So yeah, there's probably more. And the other thing that's happened is
none of that makes any sense to anyone who hasn't seen Rick and Morty.
The other thing that's happened is it kindled in me a desire to play Final Fantasy Tactics Advance for the old Game Boy Advance system.
Okay.
Because it's essentially, I feel like that's all the fun of the capturing new Pokemons, except for you can also equip them and armor them and give them special careers and magic abilities and stuff. And you have a tactical element where terrain and facing and flanking and combined tactics actually, it's much, because the combat for Pokemon is bullshit.
Yeah,
it's essentially attack or do a buff or a debuff and a powerful attack.
Dude, and that's standard it. RPG shit.
The only even more one dimensional. So
yeah, I mean, I guess I'm thinking 20 years ago RPG shit. You should maybe try Monster Hunter. You might like that.
I played one Monster Hunter 3 for the Wii U and I did not like it. I found it too brutally hard.
It is brutally hard.
And it's also very, you got to get used to the actual shooter mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas Final Fantasy Tactics is all like, so here's the thing. I got my old Silver Clamshell SP out and I got my Final Fantasy Tactics cartridge where I actually found, I had to dig through my son's toy box and I found it. But my silver thing, it's broke. So I found a Game Boy Advance simulator for my phone and a ROM for Final Fantasy Tactics, and I'm playing it very successfully on my phone. Like that, man, I might blow through a whole bunch of Advance.
You don't have like an old DS sitting around or anything?
No, I don't have any DSs capable of playing Advance games.
Gotcha.
Because Cecily and Jack both traded in their DSs for 3DSs, and
yeah,
no backwards compatibility. Kind of habitability there.
Sure.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find the copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, Dr. Ken wants to talk about Show Me a Hero. Sweet. Just finished Show Me a Hero. Have you ever gone to YouTube to watch the actual council meeting footage? It's even crazier than the movie.
Sounds amazing.
I know. I felt like the 5-minute black and white comparison sequences at the end was enough for me.
Yeah. Those were all stills, weren't they?
I think there was a little bit of video, but like no sound, I don't think.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember. The only thing I remember about, well, I don't want to talk about the end of it, but
Yeah. I will ask this, Ken, did you see anything that suggested that the David Simon production was anything less than 100% kind of even-handed about the way events went down? Because that's the one question. I started doing a little bit of research after that, and then we got caught up in the Baldies and all this other stuff. But I was trying to get a good feel on how biased or unbiased or kind of truthful the material was. I suspect it was, if anything, underplayed, because that's kind of how David Simon usually rolls.
Okay.
But I would want to know what your guys' opinion is. Louis B wants to know, what are we drinking? You appear to be drinking a Caucasian.
Yeah, drinking the dude's specialty.
The White Russian, which, is, if you don't know, is milk, Kahlua, and vodka. And I'm drinking Jim Beam and Coke. Can't beat that. Oh, that, speaking of On the Rocks, people, there was a lot of excitement on the forums about the concept of us pre-announcing the cocktail.
Like, yeah, maybe I was even thinking about doing title. That for lunch when I was doing the mixer stuff.
So that way people can actually drink along whatever we're drinking along with us.
Sure.
We could start, like, the suggestion is to start easy with, like, rum and Coke. You know, who doesn't like rum and Coke?
All right. That works. We can do rum and Coke.
All right. Dr. Ken affirms that he hasn't seen all of the material, but it does seem pretty true to life. Let's see. Dan G said, love the newsletter and the sound of the new features. He's referring to the newsletter I just sent out around noon today. What's the new studio edition behind my head? I think he's talking about... All right. Yeah. So my son got this Star Wars craft kit for Christmas. And over Christmas break, he made both me and Gino...
Who's Gino?
Sorry. Me and Jim. some Star Wars art. And what does that say?
It says no join the Empire, which I like.
Yeah, he's being seduced by the dark side. Yeah. Mine,
why don't you join the Resistance? No join the First Order. Which side will you choose?
So yeah, mine is, I'm gonna switch to the wide angle here.
Oh my god.
Wait, this way.
It's too wide.
So it says, from Jack to Dad, the Resistance is strong. May the Force be with you, Dad. And he's got light. If you can't tell, there's lightsabers on either side of
big ass Chewbacca face.
Chewbacca. Also, these are glow in the dark stickers. So this is a premium product.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's got stamps of X-Wings and TIE Fighters with an international no sign. And join the Resistance. I don't know. And this is a puffy sticker of Rey's little speeder thing. But yeah, he gave us that, and he presented it to us when he came to the studio one of the days where I had to do, I think, a Baldi's that I had to wrap up when he was with me, and I stuck mine up on the wall. So there you go. What? Oh, we need to switch away from that.
Yeah.
She's Geeky wants to know if there are any plans to do Telltale's Tales from the Borderlands. I just finished it, and it was fun.
I think we'll probably eventually get around to most of those games. I'm excited about maybe the Back to the Future and Jurassic Park ones, so even though I hear they're kind of shitty.
If they do numbers commiserate with what the other stuff we've done for The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones, I'm on board. If they're like 15-20% of the traffic, I'm like, no. So it just depends. Like, if people like it, then yeah, we'll do more. But I don't particularly... Here's the thing. I don't particularly enjoy playing the Telltale games. I think they're kind of bullshit and garbage.
Yeah, I enjoy
playing them and playing it with him and making, you know, really extreme moral choices and seeing to the extent that breaks or doesn't break, or the game just ignores it and just cutting capers with it.
Yeah, so, the thing I enjoy is cracking the jokes.
If it's fun experience and people are digging it, we get appreciable audience, and yeah, I'll do whatever. But if I'm not having a particular amount of fun doing it and no one's watching it, then what the hell am I doing? So
sure. If you're not having fun and no one's watching,
yeah,
it's a bad combo.
And even, I mean, at this point, like, even if I'm enjoying it, but no one's watching it, it's like, I can, you know, we can just not record it.
Well, we can also, it's an opportunity cost, right?
Like, yeah.
What could we be doing that might be more popular and might be just as fun?
Yeah. Know? Or more beneficial, like, you know, that takes away from doing bookkeeping and all the other stuff that we got to do. That's not fun. It's behind the scenes.
But it goes the other way too. Like, I mean, we just, you know, we announced today in the newsletter that we're, and I think before this on lunch, that we're planning to cut back on our Walking Dead coverage because we're just not having fun with that show.
Yep.
I mean, I think the most fun I have with that show now is doing a live watch because we get to crack jokes and make fun.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas doing live watch, instant cast, full cast, and all the prep required for those was just not fun anymore for me.
Yeah.
So like it goes the other way too, right? Like even if something's popular, which those are by all accounts some of our most popular stuff, but we're cutting them anyway because we're not having fun doing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the instant cast. Like that's going to be a big reduction in traffic.
Yeah, I mean, it almost cuts in half the number of downloads we're going to get from that show.
Sure.
So, but you know, if you're not having fun, who cares if it's super successful or not?
Dr. Ken says, "Are you guys going to be hit by the snowpocalypse this weekend? The world is ending, according to the news reports I saw this morning." So we're in Cincinnati. We're on the edge of the heavy snow accumulation.
I don't care. I'm going to go to the grocery store weekend. Right before.
Yeah.
The snow hits.
I went last night. We got plenty of groceries. I got Netflix. I got video games.
Right. If the power goes out, we've got problems.
I'm not even worried about that because I've got some old timey lamps in my camping supplies.
And I
got board games.
And I don't care about heat. I'm talking about entertainment.
I got board games and books, man. Like Jack had so much shit from Christmas that we haven't. The other thing I'm doing is I'm constructing a dice tower out of Legos.
That's a good idea.
And it's got like, it's made out of the castle system. So it looks like a real dice tower. And it's got, I'm using like Technic pieces to give like interlocking baffles. So I did a proof of concept last night while I was watching Community and I got like one level with one baffle and it worked really well.
They're going to go inside it. They're going to go.
Yeah. Essentially there's three different baffles and then a ramp that shoots it out to a courtyard with a wall where it holds the dice. Sweet. If you don't know what a dice tower is, it's, dice towers for someone who's either too lazy or too superstitious to roll their own dice. You drop them in a hole and it goes through a system of ramps that tumbles the dice and then throws them out and you read the result.
Yeah.
And you can get like really nice solid oak, $100 held together neodymium magnets that collapse into a little case.
Yeah.
Or you can get shitty pine ones that are made for $15 at a hobby store. So I thought it'd be just for an exercise and fun to build a Lego version. I got all my son's Legos out.
How many Tupperware tubs do you have?
So,
cause that's what everyone keeps them in.
So this, I bought him a couple years back, an IKEA like stackable storage solution. So there's these red tubs. They're roughly 1 foot tall, 1 foot wide and 2 feet deep. I suppose he's got three of those tubs full. And then like the half size tubs, he's got a whole half size tub of just minifigures and their accessories. And this is all shit from when that's the thing about Legos, they're expensive as hell, but I'm building this dice tower out of the King's Castle that I got when I was like 8 years old. And it looks, except for some where my idiot brother fucking markered on them.
Is the top of it going to have like the,
oh yeah, crenulated the, shit. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the word for it? Like, crenulated?
Yeah. It's called a crenulated tower.
All right.
No, it's got definitely. Well, you're gonna have a dice tower and you're gonna have your crenulated walls. Fuck that.
Right. No, it's worthless without him.
Yeah.
So this
I'm not afraid of power out, other than I'm a little bit more worried about heat because it's like 20 degrees out too.
More worried about heat?
Yeah, because like you cannot heat your house
A fireplace with natural gas.
Okay, you're true. That's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah,
you'd have to light it yourself because the electric lighter's not going to work.
That's true. Yeah, that's why you light it before the power.
I guess
goes
we'd
out.
Have hot water too going. Because the hot water heater is
it'll
pilot
retain,
lit. Yeah, it should.
Should retain heat.
Although it does
well.
Have some kind of electricity to turn it on and off. I don't know if that's mechanical or what though.
I don't know.
What are you doing?
So I copied over some pictures because you reminded me of something that I built years ago. No, not out of Legos, out of Constructs. Do you remember Constructs?
I do remember Constructs.
I really had a great time with Constructs when I was a kid. My cousins and my brother and I used to play this game called Look, Man. We were 8 to 14 years old here.
You don't have to explain yourself to me, Jim.
We called it Crash 'em Up, Bash 'em Up. What do you want? What do you want from kids?
So this is, I played the same thing. You build a wall with Legos and you can hurl various weighted Lego objects. You have to smash it down.
That's a rudimentary game compared to where what we played.
Okay.
We would design.
This is Jim
vehicles.
Dan Troy or what? What was it?
Mario and Anthony were the were the cousins.
Again, so Italian as fuck. This family.
Yeah. For sure. I won't tell you the last name, but it's Italian as fuck. But we built vehicles and we would design them to be crash resistant.
Okay.
As crash resistant as we possibly could. And we'd sit across the basement from each other and we'd go 1, 2, 3, and we'd throw the cars at each other, roll them across the floor and crash them head on.
Sure.
And so the idea was we'd crash them until the other car couldn't roll.
Okay.
And the one who could still roll last Joe standing is the victor. And so you'd have these iterations where people would build
roll
like
or
these
slide
roll. They had to roll.
Okay.
They were wheel based vehicles.
If they scraped, they're disqualified.
It doesn't count. I mean, you can't just like toss it across the room and say it's working.
Sure. Yeah.
So basically the wheels were super important. You had to protect the wheels because the wheels could like with a bad crash, something that's off centered, you just knock all your wheels off without your car being destroyed. Mm. So you have to protect wheels. You build wheels inside wells. And then we had the system, you know, the real small pieces that you would lock together with the little blue things.
We
built like a grid of those. And the grid, if you arranged it right, like you put some pieces facing this way, some pieces facing out, some left, some right, you could really just make this impenetrable smasher at the front of your car.
Yeah.
And then there was a space set that would come with like these cylindrical, like solid pieces, like just the molded plastic. And you could strap those to the front and those aren't going to break.
No.
They can fly off, but they're not going to break.
It's a blade of armor.
But like you put those behind the grid and it was almost impossible to destroy these things.
I did something similar to my cousin where we had a challenge. We both had two floor houses growing up and we would roll cars down our staircase and see who could withstand that. But quickly, like we both had Technic sets and we built essentially cubes.
Those fall apart real easy though,
Fuck,
right?
No, they don't. Because if you build them right, you have like, so they're essentially square boxes with holes in the corners and solid axles with big like tractor tires on every corner. So imagine a box with big ass monster truck tires at the top corner. Well, how are you going to break that?
Everything I've ever seen people build with Technics has always looked fragile as fuck.
I don't know, man, because you can essentially rivet that shit together. And like, yeah, that's true, but you can rivet that shit together and it's not going to come apart.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Like my son's Mindstorm like kit set, right? Is like, fucking a pain in the ass to take apart once you get it together. Because you have to like, okay, I have to pull this thing.
I got that shitty little makeshift wrench thing that they give me. Yeah.
All right, so are you gonna show us pictures?
Yeah,
so hell?
I built a couple of years ago when I was a couple of years, like 5 years ago.
Okay.
6, 7, 8, who knows?
So you're a grown-ass man at this point.
Yeah, grown-ass man. You know, collecting video games at the time, so grown-ass man is up to interpretation.
Sure.
Still have a video game collection for people who, but this is kind of old school. I don't know how to actually show this.
Go to the...
Wide?
No, go to scene 3. Scene 3 is our like default. There you go.
Oh, God. Okay. And then I got to add...
Just drag and drop. You can drag and drop that shit.
Oh, drag and drop.
Yep.
Look at this shit.
Become the XSplit master. Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. So this is... I built...
You designed a system to hold your video game collection?
Yeah. I built a stand to hold my video
It's dated,
game.
Too, so you know he's not
bullshit. Right? Yeah. So this was 8 years ago. Almost.
I think you just proved that Stephen Avery killed Teresa Halbach, I think. I mean, there's no way that could be faked.
Right? So I built this, and it rotates, too. Like, the bottom has a ring that rotates, so you can just rotate the whole fucking thing.
Right on.
I got another picture here, but just from another angle, I think.
Yeah. Is that in mid-rotation?
So, yeah, so you can tell those rotations are a little different.
That is a thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Kind of cool. So I feel you when you're talking about building dice towers out of Legos and, you know, kind of nerdy shit.
Yeah, it's
out
fun.
Of construction blocks.
We've been playing a lot more board games around the house lately, so.
Yeah, I was over there playing Agricola with you guys not too long ago.
And I got Jack a bunch of board games. Like, he loves Exploding Kittens, man. Kids love it, but it's kind of ponderous to play with adults. But he likes that, and he also, I got in this game called Poo. Have you heard of that?
No, but
so Pooh is a game of essentially monkeys flinging shit at each other. It's a card game where you're playing monkeys and you have different attacks and defenses against that. And it's actually a pretty complete and full featured versus card game. Honestly, it's just got a really silly core mechanic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I need to. I've always said that I've been sitting on this. My son was a big fan of Mouse Guard, which is this, if you don't know, is this very high-end art comic, hardbound comic series, where this guy imagined a world where mice were like these medieval style knights. And they had these communities where you'd have a community of mice living in this hollow tree, and you'd have ones living out of underground. And there didn't seem to be humans in this world, but whatever. And these mice would protect the frontiers from like snakes and wolves and badgers and anything that would prey on mice, which is damn near everything. Mm-hmm. It's just really it's very cute, but also intense because these mice get eaten, and like there's some stuff that's kind of scary for kids. But they had and Gen Con, when I went about 5 years ago, they had like a nice bound set that came with an RPG game. And I've been saying that when Jack gets about the age he is now, that I'm going to sit him and his little friends down and do like a Mouse Guard campaign for them. And that's last cool. year for the Reaper Mini stuff that I was showing off earlier this year, they had a whole series of they get called Mouselings. But there's like a series of 10 mice that would be perfect for like hero figures for that I'm going to fully paint and let them pick out their own ones. And then I also bought a pack of rats, and like, so they're like twice the big for the bad guys. Yeah,
sure.
So I think the dice tower
is cool. It's a good way to
official
get
rolling
into...
mechanism for, because I think it's all 6-sided dice based too. So.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Is it meant for like younger players, or is it?
I can't imagine like, I feel Mouse Guard always seemed to me like it was for the precocious 3rd to 6th graders, because while the art style, like I, as an adult, I find the art style pleasing and the stories are kind of interesting. I don't know why like a teenager or an adult would play Mouse Guard or much less read the series.
Okay.
So like you got so this little window. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he can get in the D&D and start worshiping the devil when he's in junior high.
Right. Right. Listen to the heavy metal music.
She's Geeky wants to know if we ever decided on doing a Bald Move book club. I know it's been mentioned before in the forums, I think. I'm just curious.
It's not a bad idea. Now that I'm into reading a little bit more, I'd be open to something like that.
There's an idea I was kicking around about doing a Patrick O'Brien book club, which
that seems like a never ending story.
Well, I mean, but it's something I could do on a bi-weekly basis or whatever. And the other thing is like, I really thought that The Winds of Winter would be out.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that that would be a great way to start the Bald Move book club. You know, we can consider a chapter a week or whatever. And it didn't. And it doesn't look like it's coming out even this year. So I don't know.
George is fucking up all of our plans.
And everything, like, as you say, you're not a big reader.
Yeah, I haven't.
And I'm not going to do this alone. So like it'd be half something that you'd be.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm more into reading now than I was a year ago.
Did you ever read the
case? Sure.
By the way, I forgot. I mentioned a follow up on this. Did you ever start reading The Case for Mars?
No, I never started.
That's not an appropriate book club book, but
I started Ready Player One instead.
I wonder what would be a good book to start on.
I mean, Winds of Winter or whatever it's called, Dance with Dodo Birds would have been great.
Yeah, it's long though. Like you know, those have like 65 chapters, and I didn't. So that's going to take slightly longer than a year to cover it on a week-to-week basis. And people are going to read the fuck ahead. So,
sure. Yeah.
I don't know. Like when I envision a book club, I envision adults going and reading a book and then coming back like once a month and just discussing the book in total.
In its entirety. Yeah.
I think that's probably the format it should be. These chapter by chapter things. It just, I don't know. I mean, I know they're popular, but for me personally, it's like, that's a lot of work. And it's not the way I read books. I tend to inhale books and then want to talk about them and then be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm open to the idea. I just haven't seen a particular winning format or something that's come down the pike that I could get this guy and us and the community excited about. I mean, if you got suggestions, I did just read for Christmas. I got someone got me the collection of all the novellas about the Dunkin' Egg series, which is about, it's a prequel. It takes place about 100 years before the Winds, or before the Game of Thrones series, the Song of Ice and Fire. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, I didn't get much out of it from a lore perspective because I'd already, you know, most of the times I've read any theories that use Duncan Egg as supporting evidence I'd touched on before. And there are a few, I don't want to do any spoilers, but there are a few things about the Targaryens and whatnot that have implications for the series that we're all obsessed about now. But I already knew about that. It was just more like these pretty well-written, very lightweight tales of this very young knight getting started with his squire. And the it's also neat to see the houses like 100 years ago, like who was running them and what state they were in and who was feared and who wasn't. And you see some, you know, kind of minor lords that become significant through the different rebellions and some of the houses that have fallen out of favor. Like it's kind of, that was kind of neat. And also the copy I got was lavishly illustrated. Like every other page was a pen and ink illustration of a very talented I wish I had an example of what he did, but it's almost like the even better quality if you're familiar with like the Blu-rays or the DVDs of the Game of Thrones series. Like, you know that there's a disc that has a bunch of lore and they're illustrated with this kind of charcoal pencil technique. It's that kind of very detailed, very, but it's all black and white. It's almost like a fine art drawings of guys jousting and men in suits of armor and so everyone's why you get a naked lady sometimes
because it wouldn't be Game of Thrones without that.
Sure, you got to get that sex position even in pen and ink form.
Sure,
but no, I was pleasantly surprised. I wasn't exactly looking forward to that, but I finished it over the course of like 3 or 4 nights. N-I-G-H-T, not K-N-I-G-H-T. Oh God, I actually had this as a topic to discuss. Thanks for bringing it up, Anthony. He says, are you guys this excited about the possible discovery of Planet 9? It's hard to believe how enormous its orbit may be. Have you been following this week?
Oh, I've heard the most basic details that there is potentially, they have inferred that there must be a 9th planet out there somewhere based on like some rock positioning way out in the solar system.
Well, I mean, so that's led us, the reason we found Pluto was because there was a, we suspected there was perturbations, it's minor variances of the orbits of Uranus and Neptune.
Oh, perturbations in my anus. I had to make the joke.
Found out more about physics and orbital mechanics and relativity, and we didn't need a planet, and we found Pluto essentially by accident. And then now Pluto's not a planet. So this planet is supposed to be the sizes of Neptune, and it's a very highly elliptical orbit that's out kind of like it starts out in the Oort cloud and has a orbital period of like 15,000 years or maybe even more, which that's like Pluto is like 293 years, I think, is how long it takes it to get around the sun. Yeah, so
way out there.
It's way, and
either
and
that people, or it's moving fucking slow. But
so what's interesting is like I got on some threads on the Reddit threads, Ask Science, Ask Reddit's a completely different shit show. Ask Science, people that comment on that have to have demonstrated proof of their degrees and their expertise. And they get, once they do, they're awarded flares. Like, so you'll see like astrophysicist or molecular biologist by, so you can tell when they're speaking from authority. And it was like a who's who of these guys, like at these universities, it's excitedly and skeptically also, because it's not the first time someone has said, oh, Planet X.
Yeah.
But I guess this new information is pretty compelling. But a lot of people were asking questions like, so how far out can you actually orbit the sun and still actually be called an orbit? And I guess it's technically possible for something to orbit the sun as far as 2.8 light years, which is interesting, because the closest star, which is that Alpha Centauri or Alpha Proxima?
I don't know.
One of the alpha stars. Yeah. It's got a orbital period of the same like 2.8 light years, which means that the solar systems could technically enmesh, which I thought was interesting. Now they're also saying that that's like the very the practical limit, something like, you know, 1.2 light years, but still that's way outside of what you would consider what we think of as our solar system.
Sure. Yeah,
but that's also how big and massive and badass our sun is. It's got that much gravity.
Yeah, like I'm wondering, like, if those stars were farther apart, that would necessarily increase the possible range of an orbit, right? Because, like, I assume what takes you out of the orbit of one star and puts you into the orbit of another star, or just sends you shooting off, you know, into nowhere.
Yep.
Is both your speed and also, like, the gravity well is the thing that does it, right? So, like, if it was closer to another star than it is to our star,
yeah,
and it wasn't moving fast enough, wouldn't it be sucked into the orbit of that star instead of ours?
Well, see, there's an interesting theory back in the 70s and 80s by this astronomer named Alvarez. But then, have you heard about the Nemesis theory?
No. Other than Star Trek, no.
They, you know, that there's like a bunch of extinctions. There's like five or six extinctions that this planet's gone through, where the life is essentially scoured off the surface. And the scientists found a corresponding layer of iridium around the times of these extinctions taking place. And they also had a particular period, like it seems like every 150 million years or so. And I'm making up these numbers because I don't really know. It's been 10 years since I've read these books. Mm-hmm. They theorize that what's causing this is these comets are smacking in. And the reason they're at the particular period is because there is this large, either brown dwarf or massive planet that's in a very long, that every once in a while wanders closer to the sun, which pulls a bunch of shit in from the Oort cloud, which just slams into our planet and fucks everything up.
Sure.
That theory has since been discredited, but also is one of the investigating that theory led to us discovering the Chicxulub Club, or whatever, how you pronounce that crater that's in Mexico. It's the one that happened like 70 million years ago to kill the dinosaurs. But with this evidence of this, you know, gas giant kind of floating out, I wonder if there'll be a little bit of that coming back.
Speculation.
Yeah, like, you know, you just never know when theories shake out. But I always thought the Nemesis theory was a really great idea, he wrote a book about it to kind of he didn't write the book. His protege that later did a lot of pioneering research on that crater I mentioned wrote a book talking about, like, his mentor, like, how the theory started and the evidence. And it's kind of like and it's called just Nemesis, if you want to look at it. It's a great kind of like autopsy of how science gets done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like passionate, and how people are resistant and then they're open, and then how like advocacy is both back and forth, and how it's just, I don't know, it's super interesting.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think that's about it. We got to get going because we got another commission podcast to polish off today. Hope you guys have enjoyed lunch once again, and we'll be back next week. We will not have a On the Rocks, but we'll have another lunch next Friday. Next Friday also is the open beta for The Division. Tom Clancy's Division, something me and Jim are thinking about getting into. We might be playing the beta.
Yeah.
It might just be a lunch of us with our controller and just shooting and killing guys. I don't know. But we will be back for one, and we'll see you then. Have a good weekend, everybody.
See you.